Welcome to Whatever Works, our unique fortnightly podcast in which we talk about whatever works in our lives and in the lives of our community members. Find us at whateverworks.works. And why not join our community? Simply search for Whatever Works at MeWe.com and get stuck in.
Right, testing. One, two. We're working.
One.
Let's start.
Okay, then.
Hello.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Whatever Works, our lovely podcast that you love to hear us natter on about bugger all during. And it's Monday the 3rd of June. Can you believe it's June?
No, I'm sorry, Ted. Was that actually a sentence in the English language or was it just a stream of words coming out? I'm not quite sure.
You can go back and work it out. I reckon it was fairly sound myself. Very carefully constructed. Monday the 3rd of June. Can you believe it's June already? Oh. It's halfway through the year nearly.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? I mean, you start, when you start in your teenage years, you start saying, oh, it goes by a bit quickly, doesn't it? And the older you get, the faster it goes. I can't believe it. It was only Christmas 10 minutes ago. Good grief,
exactly.
Charlie Brown.
Yes, indeed. So it's only, halfway through the year. Well, I guess halfway through the year is the end of June, but you get my meaning. it's show 207. We're back with you again to annoy you and irritate you and natter about whatever works. We scoop up quite a lot of that stuff from our MeWe group, so do come and join us in there. And if you want to go to our website with all the hooks and links and everything we talk about, it's at whateverworks.works. Everything that Aidan does and how you can get in touch with him is at aidanbell.com, and tedsalmon.com is where you'll find me. So do let us know what you think of the show. Come and join us in the MeWe group. I'm waffling now. Your turn.
Hello, everybody. I got a spam text message on my phone the other day. That's what's bothering me.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Well, actually, I didn't even get the spam message. I got a message on my phone telling me that it had detected and deleted a spam message, which, as you know, Ted, you know me well, infuriates me even more because I don't. Oh, yeah. I like to be hands-on. I don't want some machine deciding for me what I should and shouldn't see. That's not a huge problem. I'll dive into the settings of my phone and switch that off so that I get to see my own spam. Thank you very much. And then I got another one as well a few days later. I blame the NHS. I've tried to work out. I'm one of these people. I try to give my number as seldom as possible to keep my number away from spammers and spam and all that rubbish.
Well done.
I think I blame the NHS, I'm afraid, because they have my number and contact me on behalf of my mother a number of times. And perhaps it's gone through via them. I don't know. Somewhere my number has leaked out and somebody...
Or somewhere you ticked a box somewhere that you just didn't read all the...
Yeah, and that makes me even more angry.
You agree to it.
I know, and I'm so angry because I'm so careful whenever I fill in anything. Because, you know, there's this double thing. Tick this box if you want email. Tick this box if you don't want email. And you have to read so carefully. Well, yeah, you're right. I ticked the wrong box somewhere and... Grr.
Yeah, absolutely. My mum and dad, I get spam stuff all the time. And I'm sure it's because of places that they use and give their number to, like... Compare the market. All that crap. And every year when they're doing their insurance, they just give their mobile phone numbers to these kinds of companies. And I never do that. And I've got, bogus numbers set up and bogus email addresses and disposable this and disposable that. But they just don't. And then they wonder why they get littered with spam calls.
Often companies will say, can we please have your email address and phone number? And I'll say, well, you can have my email address, but I don't give my phone number to anybody. Yeah. Thank you. And often
so
that works.
Feck off.
Yes,
feck
indeed.
Off. Feck off. nothing going on with me, really, that is worth talking about. It's just more of the same, really. Actually, I'm very pleased that I've not yet been bombarded with dreadful heat. And I haven't had to get the air conditioner out yet. And we're in June. I'm doing really well this year.
I wonder if it's... I'm speaking seriously for a moment. Do you think it's to do with you're now taking a little bit more care of what you eat and your sugar intake and in view of your diabetes possibilities, etc., etc.? Do you think that has had an impact on your body temperature and how you react to temperature in general?
No.
Okay.
I think it's because the sun's not been out.
All right, then. That was me trying to be clever. Let's move on.
Yes. Talking of which, I've got to go for my follow up What's It this week to see what the last 3 months of blood tests is going to show. And I think I had the blood test last week, and I think that if it had been dreadful, they would have phoned me. So I reckon that, you know, I'm back to normal by the measures I've taken. But with the following week, we'll see.
Yeah, I've got to tell you this. I'm sure my mother won't mind me saying she's been advised in her diet to eat as much sugar as possible. My mother is, of course, an elderly lady, and she's losing weight, and the doctor's concerned that she eats well. And we've often said, well, she has a very sweet tooth, and she does tend to live off cheesecakes and meringues. We can try to cut that down. And the response is, no, have as much as you can, and try to have milky coffee and hot chocolate, because the milk will be good, and put cream in everything, and have as much sugar as you can. Yeah. So basically I said to the nurse, so you're telling my mother to do everything that everyone else can't do and wishes they could. And she said, yes, that's basically it. Lucky for some, eh?
Yeah, excellent. What a lovely thing to be told, eh? You can have all the Haagen-Dazs you fancy.
Yeah.
Right, okay, feedback from the group. Actually, the first one is mine. I bought some Your Way.
What?
Rubber.
Your Way.
Exactly. I hadn't realised till now that that's what the play on the word was, Your Way. Y-O-R-W-E, Your Way. Rubber grip take. I talked about this on PSC at the weekend, so I won't bang on about it too much. But it's really good kind of grippy tape that I put on the back of my mobile phones.
I was going to ask you what it had to do with PSC, but now you've explained it. Thank you.
On the back of phones and cases that are really slippery, and it worked really, really well. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But as I say, if you want to know the lowdown on the whole thing, I'll go back to PSC and listen to it. It's $12.99 for a roll. It's not cheap, but it actually does seem to be quite good. Later on, I'm going to come to another kind of grippy tape, which you were interested in, weren't you?
Well, now this is interesting because, dear listeners, Ted and I had a bit of a conversation in our recording notes before starting today, because I read this Your Way rubber grip tape and thought, this is perfect, because my mother has some grip handles in the bathroom. A lot of people have these about the house to help you steady you as you're walking around the house. And the ones that we have, they have no friction at all. They're smooth. So I've wrapped round some tape years ago, which is now horrid and sticky and needs to be removed and replaced. And this rubber grip tape looked perfect to me, except that it's black and our handles are white, so it wouldn't be aesthetically very pleasing. But you seem to be advising me that the one you're going to talk about later would be better.
Yes, absolutely, because I put the one that we're going to talk about later around my mum and dad's grip handles by the doors. And it works much, much better than this this phone stuff. Let's talk about that a bit later.
Okay, we'll come to it later. Let's move on.
Yeah.
It's me.
It is.
Do you remember the Varifocal saga? How could you forget it? It continues, Ted. I have a confession to make. I bought Varifocals from a shop. Dun, dun, dun. Dear listeners will remember we talked long and hard about varifocal glasses on the last show and the difference between bifocals and varifocals, and we both bought pairs from Goggles for You.
Yes.
And you got on with yours and I couldn't get on with mine. Mm. Well, I really, really miss that middle distance that you get from varifocals and don't get from bifocals, because bifocals are literally that, two different things with a sharp difference, and varifocals graduate between all three distances. And I was really missing them, and I was having trouble, and my eyes were actually not comfortable with them, and I chatted with the family, and I looked into my finances, and in the end I thought, oh, screw this, I'm going to do this. And I spent £400, much of which will come back from insurance, I hasten to add very quickly, on a pair of proper, in inverted commas, varifocals from Boots. I went into Boots. I told them the sad story. I said, yes, I know I tried them before and didn't like them, but I really think that having worn these bifocals for so long, I think I might be able to get used to them now. And I ordered a pair. And they came, and I put them on, and I love them. They are fantastic. It's chalk and cheese. I mean, I can understand why you pay that much money. When I went in, you know, the pupillary distance that we talked about. Wow, I said it this time correctly. And how we talked about looking into a mirror and people were suggesting holding a ruler at certain distances and blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, my pupillary distance was measured by the lady who does that in the store. She then called the optician to come and have a second look, and she did a second look. And then they get a pair, they get the glasses that you want and they put them on your face and they draw a little dot on those very glasses. And then they have a discussion about how high or low they should be in your field of vision. And then they get measuring tools out and they start discussing it. And in fact, my pupillary distance apparently is slightly different in one eye. I have about a 1 or 2 millimeter difference between the eyes. So the point I'm making is that you really do get what you pay for. I mean, you get that very professional job of sorting it all out before they get sent away to be made. And when they came back, they were fantastic. And I got used to them pretty quickly. And I really love them. And in actual fact, this ties in with a conversation that was on MeWe this week, which was concerning blue light and blue light filtering. They sent me glasses with the blue light filter. And there was a very slight yellow colour in them. So I went back after the weekend and said, "Ew, don't like this." And again, being proper, in inverted commas, glasses from a shop, they said, "That's fine. We'll do them again." So actually, I'm now back on the bifocals for a few days while they remake my glasses without the blue filter attachment. But I'm delighted. It's very posh. They're called Verilux Physio Glasses. I've actually got a little book waxing lyrical about them. Of course, they were designed with AI, it says, what wasn't. And I get a little credit card size card that's authenticity of my very, you know, blah, 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 blah. Lots of rubbish and unnecessary expense. But I'm very, very happy with my glasses. I'll shut up now.
Yeah, the other thing to be said about the pupillary distance is that, as we were saying before, that there's general agreement that the human body adapts to, if it's half a millimetre wrong from standing in front of the mirror and doing it yourself, the body will adjust to
yes,
that.
Yes, I think so, yes.
And I am living proof of the fact that that has worked.
Yes.
Because the pair that I've got is absolutely fine. There was no need for three and four members of staff to come and measure me like you just described. And that's what you're paying 400 quid for, I suppose, all these salaries.
Yeah, and I think it's also, I mean, I have to put my hands up and say, as you know very well, Ted, I am a very pedantic person. And I'm also pedantic in my senses. If I'm in, as you know, I can't sleep in a room unless I'm in a lead sealed box, because the slightest noise, if somebody drops a pin over the road, I hear it. And I'm very, very sensitive also with my eyesight. So if there's the tiniest speck of dirt on my glasses, I notice. If there's the tiniest lack of focus in my glasses, I notice. I think what I'm saying is my brain is not as clever as other people's and not so able to get used to these slight variances. So that's my excuse, yeah. And I'm sticking to
it. Well, I'm glad that you like them. And so how have you got the insurance, or is that a private question? A
relatively private question. I don't want to go into great detail, but I have a health insurance policy on through which I am able to claim a certain amount for, dental and optical and that sort of thing, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Otherwise,
all right. Let's move on. Steve Litchfield is next with USB stick audio copy.
Oh yes.
I know it's old school, he says, but once a year I update a 64 GB USB stick with my favourite 1970s band's music, and this is always ready to go, even if everything else fails me on the move. It's also effectively an off-site backup of my custom music collection. Always helps, he says. This is the story behind this is that he uses this USB stick in his car, and he because it's got a USB-A socket in there, and he can just plug it in and ready to go. The thing that I found about doing this kind of thing.
Hello, is that the 1242 to Manchester going by?
That was some sort of really beefy diesel engine. I saw it go by. The thing I found about sticking these sticks into things is that you often don't get control over playback. So it just kind of, you put it in and it plays it in sequence, unless your machine is more clever than that. But the ones that I've used, it just kind of plays it from the first track, I guess alphabetically, and just keeps going. And you can't really pick songs, but maybe with some car systems you can. Anyway, there you go. An idea.
Yeah, I've encountered that as well. Unless you have the software that allows you to select what you want, it does indeed just start from the beginning and play through in sequence, which means every time you turn it on, you get the same first song again. I actually remember posting on this and saying to Steve, "You call that old school? My backup in my car is the 6 CD changer, and I just put in new discs when I want to change my music in there."
Yeah, yeah. Great days.
I bring you a lovely little thing. It's called a magnetic USB-A to USB-C charger cable. Well, there's nothing new about an USB charger cable, absolutely. But this one is magnetic throughout its entire length, which means, this is great fun, I bought it for travelling. I think it's about a metre long. When you wind it up, it just sticks to itself. Because it's magnetic along its entire length. And it's fantastic. And it's gone on. I mean, I've had it now. I like to hang on to things for a little while to make sure I know what I'm talking about after the USB lights saga of some years ago. I've had it and I've used it several times and it doesn't seem to be dropping its magnetic abilities or any such. It's lovely. Normal cables, you sort of wind it up over your fingers and then when you take it off, it flops apart unless you attach it with some kind of gizmo. In this case, you just wind it round and there you are. It just sits quiet. Impatiently, like a good dog, waiting for you to say, "Okay, we're going to use you again now." Not terribly cheap. I paid $12.99 for mine, and actually, it now seems to have gone up to about $19.99. However,
there is a 30% voucher, though, so that brings it down to about the same as you paid.
Oh, okay, and it's a quality cable, I suppose, also because it's got whatever metal is in there causing the magnetism. So it's quite a good. It feels like a quality cable that's going to last. But for this USP, I think it's well worth that money. It's convenient, useful and good fun.
Good shout. Yeah, and that 30% voucher is still there. And it's also on the longer cable and the C2C cable. So that's a really interesting little gizmo gadget, which I'm not sure that I've seen before. So magnetic, eh?
Yes.
Have you read this thing about the change in the top of bottles?
Oh, I have, yes.
I bought a bottle of Slimline Schweppes lemonade recently because that seems to be all I'm allowed to drink. And I couldn't work out what was going on. I couldn't get the blooming lid off. It was on there. And then I read this article about what it was all about. And it's all to do with European standards, which apparently don't affect the UK. But we're having to tag along because these companies that make these bottles are not going to make special batches of them just for the UK. So we just have to, tag along with what the EU are doing anyway. We won't have a political discussion about that. So you undo the top of the lid and you can't get the blooming thing off properly because it's stuck on there. So I've just ended up ripping it off or cutting it off because it's so annoying. And I'm sure that everyone else that is able to do such a thing will do so. Apparently it's designed to make sure that when people chuck out their bottles, the plastic gets chucked out at the same time, all of it together, and that you don't end up with bottle tops all over the ocean or whatever. Really annoying. Have you seen this?
I am with you, Ted. I have, and I hate them with a passion, and the first thing that happens is I reach for the scissors. Horrible, stupid thing. I'm a grown man. I'm capable of putting the bottle top back on the bottle when I finish with it. Thank you very much.
Yeah. As usual, they've done their the market research, and they reckon that where it's been tried elsewhere, it's working. They got Coca-Cola on. According to this article, they first of all got Coca-Cola on board with it, and they were trialling it with the EU, and they declared it a success, and so that was it. Anyway, there you go. I wonder who bought a portable blackout blind, because I really fancy one of these. But the trouble is, it's too small and it's too expensive for my uses. This is a portable blackout blind, which instead of kind of having to stick it in onto glass forever, it's got these kind of Velcro thingies on the corners. So presumably you cut this thing to the size of the window you want. I think typically a Velux window in the loft or something, where you don't want it all the time, but you want to be able to put it up in the summer and down in the winter or whatever. And it looks really good. It's got... So you've got this Velcro stuff you stick on the corners and it sticks into place by the looks of it. Yeah, as I say, the only trouble is that it's 11 quid and it's only 200 centimetres by 150 centimetres. So I guess for one window, I mean, it's a decent size, but, in order to do that to my place, I'd need about 30 of these. but then not everyone has a static home to cover. Anyway, easy to fit with Velcro, of course, and... they, you know, a great idea. Just, I want it a bit cheaper. And the other thing I wanted to just give a big thank you to whoever bought the iPhone 15 Pro Max. This netted me the biggest amount of money I've ever got in my pennies from Amazon thing at £9.16, because the iPhone 15 Pro Max is quite expensive. So whoever did that, thank you very much. That was nearly a tenner I got for that. So well done indeed. So yes, any thoughts?
Yes, I couldn't sell an iPhone fast enough if I had one. That's the first thought. The second thought, having alienated half our audience, is the blackout blinds. I've come across those on film sets. I know this stuff. And I've seen it much, much bigger on film sets. I'm even wondering if some enterprising bod has bought some of this and cut it up into pieces to sell. I don't know. But yes, they're fantastic. I have come across them before, and I think they're wonderful.
Excellent. So thanks again for everyone who uses my affiliate link. That's really helpful. It does give me pennies, or in some cases pounds for the looks of it, if you spend enough. So it's all the same for you when you go shopping on Amazon, and you just need to go in via my URL, which is tinyurl.com/AmazonTedUK. I know what's been bought, but I don't know who's bought it. So your secrets are safe with Amazon, but I get some pennies. So thank you for that.
Do it now.
TED's top tips. Never throw away your old washing up sponge. You know those washing up sponge thingies? They reckon that if you don't chuck them away, then you can use them in your plant pots, and they keep your plants hydrated because they retain the water. They soak up the water, and then you don't have to water them so often. But this started a bit of a shitstorm in MeWe, because everyone was ploughing in with the problem of this, which is that microplastics are going to deteriorate the soil and make it all, you know, there's always a counter argument, isn't there?
Right.
This article that I linked to actually does say you've got to clean it really, really thoroughly and disinfect it before you do this and blah, 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 so it won't affect the soil and the plants and what have you. But yeah, people are saying that this is maybe not such a good idea as they think because of microplastics, but it sounds all a bit technical to me. I thought it was just a good idea, soaking a sponge and then sticking it under your plant.
Well, it was your second caveat that worried me more about, excuse me, can you really get a used sponge clean enough? I mean, even surely the tiniest traces of whatever dirt is in there, or indeed whatever disinfectant you used to clean the dirt is in there, could damage your plants. So, yeah, I would say it's a fabulous idea if you don't mind microplastics and you use clean ones. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm with the group. Not quite sure how good an idea that really is.
Fair enough.
Still using and still using.
What are you still using this week, Tedward?
I'm going to speak up for Jim Fowle, our lovely group member, on his Flymo Vision Turbo Compact 330, which he is still using.
That's a lawnmower, I think, in old money, is it?
Oh, yeah. Flymo lawnmower. Okay. By the way, he says, your last show was a great one. I tuned in while I was out running. Well, sometimes, mostly walking, he says. Anyway, he says he bought this. It's just a quick one. I bought this mower in 2001, and it's still going strong 23 years later and in regular use. I have sharpened the blade a couple of times in that time, but it's still going, still working. And it's turned out to be really good. And it looks like that Flymo still sell this model, because it's still out there. And I'll put a link in the show notes to it. So it looks very good. And Flymo, yeah. I haven't used a Flymo lawnmower for such a long time. They're okay if you don't want to collect the grass, I suppose. Although I'm sure there is a Flymo that does collect the grass by now.
Yes, I mean, Flymo, Black & Decker, these are companies that have been around forever and a day, aren't they? So I guess clearly you can trust them. Nice one, Jim.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
And Daniel Bemis brings us his fridge.
Hey!
Lawnmowers and fridges this week. Daniel Bemis brings us an LG fridge, and he links to a 6-minute YouTube video review, or 3 minutes if, like me, you tend to watch at double speed. Daniel says, I'm still using my great LG fridge. It keeps food fresh and in great condition, and the temperature control is simple to use. I find cleaning the shelves and fridge to be quick and easy. The shelves are made from a tough glass that fits onto the railing snug and tight. The adjustable shelf is great for tall bottles or items, and the craft ice it automatically makes for you every day won't melt fast and keeps your alcoholic drinks cold and not diluted. 3 years later, I'm still loving this fridge, says Daniel. That excellent. Good call. I've got a question, though, Daniel. How can this ice be better than other ice? I mean, you say here it won't melt fast, as if other ice does melt fast. Surely ice is ice, whatever fridge it came out of. But there we are. That's my pedantic streak, so I'll let that go. Nice
craft
fridge, Daniel.
Ice.
Thank you. What's
craft ice?
Craft ice?
Well, Daniel can let us know, can't he? Because I've never heard of that either. So, yes, it sounds very, very clever and technical. Let us know, Daniel. Jeremy Harpham is last, and he's got an Any Sharp knife sharpener. Cheapest chips at £9.99, as well as still using. I bought this over 10 years ago, he says. I don't have any special knives, just generic kitchen ones, but this does an excellent job of sharpening them for food preparation. It even does serrated ones. Conveniently, suctions to a worktop, and then you move the blade horizontally backwards towards you to sharpen. Dead easy, and two passes at most is all you need to sharpen your generic ordinary knives. I'm highlighting that because, of course, our cuisine expert Chris Kelly jumped in on this item and says, don't use that on your lovely precious knives. Jeremy said, no, it's all right. They're not lovely precious knives. They're just ordinary knives. Anyway, Jeremy finishes by saying, I think it was originally bought at Betterware or Lakeland or somewhere like that. But now, of course, you can get them on Amazon. And we'll put a link in the show notes to that. £9.99. And it's called Any Sharp. And just ignore Chris. Unless you've got really expensive knives, then don't.
Well, do you know what? I mean, with apologies to Jeremy and to Chris, I've never sharpened a knife in my life. I mean, I use a knife and we cheap and cheerful knives. And I think maybe once or twice in my lifetime, we've replaced the knife and there you go. So sorry about that.
when I was a kid, apparently, according to my parents, there used to be a guy that came round to the house to sharpen knives.
Yes.
And he would just turn up at the door like he was selling groceries. And he would just, any knives to sharpen? And these people had a name, and I can't remember what it was now. Tinkerer? No, it's not a tinker, is it? It's got a name of the knife sharpening man, but I actually don't remember it.
I vaguely remember that. And in the musical Oliver, there's a sequence where a lot of traders are selling and walking around, and one of them shouting, any knives to grind, mistress, any knives to grind. Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Well, apparently that did happen when I was a kid, but I just don't remember it at all. But so there you go.
Well, sorry, no knives to grind here.
Right, we're going to come back to the wrap thingy that we were talking about earlier now.
To the thing that you wrapped. Oh, not that kind of wrap. Sorry, Ted.
You have to be so careful what you say, don't you? This is a cohesive bandage wrap, the very one that I suggested that might be good for your mum's grips handles, because I put it round the handles of my mum and dad's, and it worked really well. They had some of the handles that we put up when they were getting older. Some of them were very slippery. Some of them were not. Some of them had a grip on them already, but some were slippery. And this stuff has done a really good job. So it's an odd kind of tape. It sticks to itself, but if you try and stick it to anything, it doesn't stick. But if you wrap it round something and stick it back on itself, it's like a cohesive self-adhesive thing. But the only thing it sticks to, it's really difficult to describe. I think it's designed to be used by vets for animals' limbs and putting round sprains and stuff like that. But anyway, once you put this thing round, it grips really nicely. It's hard to describe. It's apparently breathable elastic, and you get in this packet for £10, you get 12 2-inch rolls. So you get 5 yards of this stuff. You just cut it with a pair of scissors. As I say, I've wrapped it around a number of things, and it works really well. But you just need to wrap it around more than once so that it can stick to itself.
Yes.
And none of it's come off yet. Now, Your concern was that it was black. Well, I also discovered from my links in Amazon that you can also get it in white for the same price. So maybe this is worth a try for you. I would send you some of mine because there's so much of it, but it's all black.
Hmm, tempted I am.
The question, though, would it work in a bathroom what's very steamy?
Good question. I don't know. Perhaps I should send you one so you can try it before you...
I could do a test with it,
yes. Yeah. Thank you. Even if it's the wrong colour. But my feeling is that probably wouldn't make any difference.
Right.
That's my gut feel. In fact, it might make it better.
And, of course, what one could do is just put a little dab of Evo stick at the end where it finishes its wrapping so that it won't start to unravel.
I'll send you one.
Thank you, sir. Oh, you see, I was hoping there'd be a nice jingle there to break the... But no, it's me straight on with a cough. Excuse me, I've got frogs meeting aplenty in my throat today. Mm. I bring you the Wetnfix. Wetnfix. Wetnfix, in it, yeah. Full disclosure, I don't have this. I've never tried it. I've spotted it on our favourite store. And I think if it works, then it's the ideal chance for you to say your favourite word. Because... at $5.99, you get basically what it does is it repairs raw plugs or raw plug holes, to be more precise. So if you've got a plasterboard in which you've had a raw plug, and as happens to all of us from time to time, the wall's a bit crumbly and the raw plugs come out, you can't put another raw plug in because the hole's now too big. What you do with this thing is you wet it. You wrap it around the raw plug, so it's just basically like a bit of soggy, plastery paper that you wrap around your raw plug, pop the raw plug back into the wall, wait allocated time, I think it was 3 minutes, and then lo and behold, it's as if you've got a raw plug back into a fresh plaster wall and it'll hold as it would have done in the first place. I'm a bit dubious. I haven't tried it. I can't vouch for it. But if it works, you can say...
fiendish. I'm just working I suppose that this is a kind of papery or material version of that's white stuff. What's it called?
I don't know what white
you
stuff.
You know, that white stuff that you...
Plaster of Paris.
No.
But actually, now that I've said it, it's probably exactly what this is. I think this probably is tiny pieces of plaster of Paris. But go on. Excuse me.
What's that white stuff you put into a hole? Polyfiller.
So,
before this invention, you would just put polyfiller in, then drill it again. I suppose this saves you from the drilling it again bit,
yes,
doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Sort of probably...
It does look very clever.
Yeah, it just sort of expands and fills the hole all by itself.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say I'd buy some and test it, but I haven't got any holes that need filling, so...
I know.
I can put the recommendation out there.
Yeah, Wetnfix, $5.99. Somebody try it so that we don't all have to buy one, please. And the last one for this particular section of the show, Cheap as Chips, is the Night Eyes S-Biner Micro Lock. I was trying to find a way of attaching my scooter key to my main key ring, particularly for the winter months, because when I go out to start things up, I start the engine up and then I've got to use the rest of the keys to take the cover off and take the locks off and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it's really useful to have the moped, the scooter, running in that time. So I wanted to get a little... the tiniest carabiner that I could, which was not going to make me look feel like a kind of jailer's bunch of keys on me.
Yeah.
But just to be short and easy to get on and off. This one does the job. You get two of them for £5.99, which is why it's cheap as chips. And it's also quite smart because it's got a little... They're really tiny. They're about like not even an inch long. And you in the middle of it, you've got a little turning plastic lock mechanism. So when you want to take it off, you're not relying on some tension mechanism.
Yeah.
It's just got a lock. You just undo the lock, take it off, and then put the key on and put it back on. Works really quickly. Well, I suppose it's whatever you get used to, and you get used to using these things, but it works very quickly and it seems to do the job. And it's not too big to make it, as I say, looking like I've got a whole chain of keys hanging off me or in my pocket. So very cute, very nice. Two for £6 and recommended.
Very good.
better before.
Matthew Jones thinks eBay was better before.
Yeah.
And having read through this, I do tend to agree with him. Matthew says, I remember eBay originally felt like an online car boot sale. Here. A chance to pick up used bargains rather than a simple retail storefront. My particular gripe this time is for large, more valuable items. If you're interested in, say, a car that is listed on eBay, you are expected to commit to buying and paying for it before you can even look at it.
What?
To verify small details like whether or not it actually exists or even if it works.
What?
In which parallel universe is that an acceptable buying process? I suspect, says Matthew, that previously many people would simply do a deal outside of eBay. I think eBay was amazing back in the day. Now it's pretty useless as anything other than just another retail store. I tend to agree. I thought eBay was wonderful earlier, and whenever I had to sell anything, it was for my first port of call. Then they started taking their pound of flesh, which annoyed me. And now I totally agree with Matthew. It's gone from being a sort of free-for-all buy and bring and buy sale to just another store, but one that I don't think is, you know, can't hold a candle to the likes of Amazon or any of the others. So, yeah, I'm with you, Matthew. Great shame. Better before. What do you think?
Yeah, I do agree. I haven't used eBay for years. And if I need to buy something on there, I tend to use my mother's account because she's still got one from years ago as well. Occasionally, I do need to buy socks. Because with my size 14 feet, to buy socks that fit me properly costs an absolute fortune, whereas on eBay you can just get them the same price as any other socks. And the downside of that is that the last two batches of those socks I bought have just not lasted at all. Holes in them very, very quickly. On, like, the third wash, they start to get holes in them. So they're obviously not very good quality. So, in a sense, it's the same thing as what Matthew is saying, that you can't see it. You've got to... And when it's something the price of a car, that's a huge risk, isn't it?
That's ridiculous, yes.
And they're going to, as you said, they're going to take their 10% or whatever they charge these days. And so it's going to end up more expensive. I suppose the only thing you can do really is go round to the person's house and hope they live near you. And that's when it is done better, possibly, with that thing you were talking about. Is it Facebook Market or something?
Yes, I was just going to say Facebook Marketplace is much better in that respect. And always, I will never send anybody money for anything. But what you can do is you just look locally. You just look in your local area or as far as you're prepared to travel. And then you can just, as you say, go to the house and shake hands and say, right, can I see this, please? And I'll give you cash for it if I like it.
Yeah, exactly. But it's always going to be a gamble buying secondhand, whatever you do. I agree with Matthew. There's no way I would shell out that kind of... I was once scammed on eBay, which is one reason I don't use it now, for a £300 phone.
Right.
And that was about 15 years ago. And I've never used it myself ever since. And I never forget that I couldn't get the money back. PayPal and eBay were clamming up on me. And I was just ripped off, and I had to just stomach the loss.
Right.
So eBay better before, but also eBay room 101.
I see what you did there, Tim. Very good. It's annoying me though because I was going to do the same thing. So what have we got?
We've got Ian Chappell on retail labels. I hate buying something new, he says, only to find that I can't remove some stupid label without potentially damaging the article.
Yes, yes, yes! Oh, gold star for Ian Chappell. Absolutely.
Sometimes it's a label applied by the manufacturer, sometimes by the retailer. In either case, it's bloody annoying and incredibly stupid. I particularly hate those labels where you try to remove them carefully, only for the paper surface to detach from the gluey base layer, leaving you with a hard, even harder to remove gluey triangle.
Rectangle. Yes.
Absolutely ridiculous. So it sounds like Aidan agrees with you.
Oh, Aidan agrees wholeheartedly. I mean, it just annoys me too. And you just think, what's the point? I've bought a brand new article here, virgin clean, and you've ruined it with a sticker. Danny Hoy jumped in suggesting 99% isopropyl alcohol. And of course, never to forget our wonderful, often visited sticky stuff remover liquid, which I swear by and have a bottle of in the garage on hand at all times. Yeah, but the trouble is, though, some things you can't even use alcohol or sticky stuff. I mean, if it's something that's perhaps in any way porous and might get marked, you know. Yeah, I'm absolutely with Ian on this. Yuck, 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 yuck.
Indeed. But you can soak stuff, of course. And if you're particularly wealthy and they've got a dishwasher, then that tends to kind of try and get things off. But only, as you say, for non-porous stuff. There is a problem there. Anyway, thank you, Ian.
Once in a while, I'm to be found in my mother's bedroom borrowing her hairdryer, heating up a label, because that's the other way to do it. You need to heat up a label beyond the point where you can touch it. And then you can peel it off while the glue is still sticky underneath. But really, utterly ridiculous. Almost as ridiculous, excuse me again, as Amazon Prime when you're watching a video. Now, this is really a bug of mine, and I'm going to try and keep calm as I tell you, that whenever you watch a series or an episode of anything on Amazon Prime, the next episode wants to auto-start at the end. Now, that annoys me very much to start with, but what really gets my goat is they give you 3 seconds. 1, 2, 3... And then it starts. Now, sometimes it's a little longer, but the series that I'm currently watching, I get 3 seconds to dive in with the remote control and stop it from playing the next episode. So not only does it interfere with the credits, and sometimes you've watched something that could be very moving or emotional, and you just want to have a sort of moment at the end, but no, you can't because you're diving for the remote control to stop it starting the next episode. And then, even if you are quick enough to stop it, and then you say, right, I'll go and make a cup of coffee now and then do something else afterwards. When you come back into the room, it started the second episode anyway. Because even having stopped it from doing so halfway through the credits, when it gets to the end of the credits, it will then automatically start the next episode. And don't even get me started on the little box in the corner telling you, recommending something else you might want to watch while you're trying to watch the credits. Or the box on the left-hand side that says, did you enjoy this programme? Yes or no? Amazon cannot entertain the shock horror concept that one might actually want, firstly, to get to the end of the credits uninterrupted and enjoy the credits, and secondly, to stop watching. Room 101, lock the door, fed up with them. Amen.
I don't want to upset you even more, but there's a setting you can turn that off with Amazon Prime Video.
Is there? I couldn't find it.
And that was annoying me, so I did turn it off. However, I will say that, and I use my Roku box to access Amazon Prime Video. Now, whether the way you access it, there may not be a way of turning it off, I don't know. But certainly I was able to turn it off. But Amazon Prime Video has gone down the toilet, frankly. And it is Room 101 worthy, because they've charged people more money to take the adverts away during your watching, even though you're a Prime member. And they've cut back on this, that, and the other, and they've just made the whole Amazon Prime Video just a bit shit, and so much so that I just never look at it. And they did this what's that thing called, Freevee. Mm-hmm. which introduced adverts to certain amounts of their content. And it's just all advert driven, and it's really, really annoying. And there is no way of getting rid of all of that. You can pay an extra £2 a month to get rid of some of it, but not all of it. If you want to watch something on Freevee, then you still got to just sit through the adverts. It's like watching ITV. I just don't use it anymore. And if I didn't value next day delivery, I would ditch my Amazon Prime Video.
I do believe you're even angrier about this than I am, Ted.
I'm angry. I'm still angry about Amazon, though, because one other thing that they do is that just recently that I've started getting these text messages when, 3 minutes before my delivery arrives, I get a text message that says, a driver needs help with your delivery. And it's an SMS message. And at first I thought it's a scam. And then I thought, oh, no, I am expecting something. And then about 3 minutes later, you get another text message saying that it's been delivered. And I don't know quite what they're trying to do to, because I didn't really have time to even respond to that message. 3 minutes later, it says it's delivered. I just ignore it always now. Apparently, John Doe, one of our group members, says that in India they use subcontractors, and some of them will call as they enter the road just to ensure you're at the door ready for them when they arrive. So perhaps that's what they're doing. They're trying to get someone to be alerted to the fact that they're just around the corner. I don't know. But any thoughts?
That concludes today's AA meeting, Amazon Anonymous. well, our Amazon people have just taken to lobbing it on the doorstep. Sometimes they don't even ring anymore. Sometimes I just go to the door and open the door and there's an Amazon parcel and they haven't even bothered to ring the doorbell. So I guess it just...
Okay, so you haven't seen one of these messages?
I've never had one of these messages. I hate these messages. Okay. Your parcel's on its way, your parcel's arrived, your parcel's been delivered, did you like your delivery? Yeah. All of that rubbish. But no, I've never had please help message, no.
Well, look, clearly a few people have, because John Doe has said in India he's had it. But I don't know. Let us know, dear listeners, if you've had this message or seen this or whatever. Or perhaps I've been singled out for this deluge of
yes,
digital
being
drama.
So anti-Amazon. And going back quickly to the business of the credits and the automatic starting of the next episode, I had tried to switch that off when I was still watching with my old Humax box. And listeners will know I'm now watching on a Freeview box. Still going great, by the way. Right. So maybe I should start... have a little plough through the menus on there and see if I can do it this time. Get rid of it all.
I think you should be able to. The same thing happens in YouTube, and I turned that off as soon as I saw it happening. But anyway, have a look.
Right, it's time for us to breathe deep and centre our chakras and calm down a little bit and give someone a gold star. I want to give a gold star to Niwa. Niwa, we know well on this show, produce a lot of surprisingly good quality audio and particularly photographic and filming equipment. You may remember many months ago now, I brought onto the show a dimmable 56K USB LED video light with pro-adjustable tripod stand and colour filters, which is basically two very dinky little LED lights, USB powered, and I put them either side of my computer so that when I have to do any sort of video conference with anybody, conversation with anybody, I can use these lights if necessary to illuminate my pretty face from both sides. One of them just up and died for no reason whatsoever. I just discovered one day it wasn't working. I have no idea why. I didn't do anything to it. It just didn't work. And I thought, oh, what the heck? It's worth a try. I sent an email to Niwa saying, it's broken. And they just wrote back and said, OK, we'll send you a new one. And they did. Yeah. They just said, what's your address? We'll send you another one. And they sent me another one. And they, no cost and no question. No, please send us I think I had to send them the purchase receipt to prove it was a genuine purchase. Right. But beyond that, no questions, no concerns. They didn't want the old one back. They just said, yeah, we're sending you one. And I didn't get the whole kit, which I thought might happen. But no, just a short while afterwards, I got a parcel and it was a replacement LED. So there we are. I'm very happy with
Excellent.
It. Good for Niwa.
Sounds like my story of my Logitech keyboard where it really wasn't a huge problem, but one of the keys that the motif was wearing away shortly after I bought it. I think I spoke about it on the show, and I did the same thing. I contacted Logitech. They didn't want to know anything. They didn't want the old one back. They just sent me a new one and no questions asked. I just referred them to, like you did, the fact that I bought it from Amazon, and it just arrived. And I've still got both of them. And the old one's working absolutely fine. It's just that the key's worn away. You can't see what's on it. So that was a real result. And it sounds like Niwa are similarly minded.
I wonder if companies in general have to be a lot more careful these days because, you know, they don't know that I don't have 2 million followers on my Twitter feed and could just jump on and say, they're rubbish. So I suppose they have to take a bit more care these days, don't they?
Maybe so, yes, okay. Right, another shout out for Handbrake, the DVD and Blu-ray ripping software. Danny Hoy this time with a gold star for Handbrake. Install it on the PC, insert the DVD or Blu-ray, hit the start button and make a cup of tea. I've dabbled with a few other programs that do the job before, but Handbrake makes things so much easier. And absolutely agree with you, Danny. As we've mentioned before on the show, Handbrake is just brilliant, and it's completely free and open source. Occasionally, I do get it fail. It doesn't read a particular codec, in which case I leap into MakeMKV, which is similarly free, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. And then that does the bits that Handbrake seems to struggle with a bit. Sometimes that's to do with subtitles as well, I found. Anyway, for goodness sake, this is why the likes of me and you and Danny Hoy still have a Windows desktop class computer, because try doing this kind of thing with an app on a phone or a tablet, for goodness sake.
I mean, the work I do in Photoshop and Premiere video editing, I mean, I couldn't touch the edges with the largest phone on the planet. No, absolutely. I'm totally with you there, Ted.
Exactly. Yes.
And also one over here for Handbrake as well. You brought it to the show some years ago now, and I've had it in my arsenal ever since. I don't rip. I'm not a ripper. But for any video editing that I do, once in a while, Premiere will say, oh, I can't read this. And then I say, not to worry. And I open up Handbrake and I just translate it. So,
right. Yeah.
Very good. Very, very good indeed.
Very, very good indeed.
Mike Clator is very, very good indeed, and brings us Daniel Bemis. Daniel Bemis's grandpa's weeder. A lot of apostrophes in that sentence.
Yeah.
Basically, Daniel Bemis brought grandpa's weeder, and Mike Clator wants to thank him for it, and says, a simple gadget that allows you to pull weeds while standing and with minimal effort. This is a lovely thing. This is a good, traditional, old-fashioned, nothing technological weed puller, a stick with a bit of metal on the end of it, basically. Mike says, I live at about 59,000 feet elevation, so by the end of September...
59,000 feet? Good grief. That would be high, wouldn't it? That would be double the height of Everest.
He's on the space shuttle. At 5,900 feet elevation. You see, I don't understand feet anymore. I wish we used new money on this show. So by the end of September, when I purchased this little beauty, the weed season was over. The weeds are now back, though, with a vengeance, and the weeder is proving itself invaluable.
Hurrah!
5 out of 5 stars, and one of the best purchases I've made in years. Thank you, Daniel, for saving my knees.
Yeah, it is a clever bit of kit, isn't it? It's all in the design of the end bit, isn't it? As when Daniel brought it to the show previously, we kind of looked at it quite closely, and it's just the way it's designed. And if you go to Amazon, there are lots of similar tools, but none of them just seem to be quite as good as Grandpa's weeder. So it is a good shout.
It is a good shout. And I mean, as you know, I enjoy playing with the pond and the garden that I've created around the pond. And I'm very, very lucky that having just turned 60, I'm still able to get down on my knees and crawl around and climb and pull and do whatever I need to. But I know the day is coming. So I'm sort of stocking these things in the back of my mind. Grandpa's weeder. Sooner or later, I'm going to need that myself.
I've heard that you spend quite a lot of time on your knees. Anyway, it's time to wrap things up. We've been here for nearly an hour.
Oh, dear, there'll be letters.
And we hope you've enjoyed the show. Links to all the stuff we've been rattling on about is, as usual, on our website. Are as usual on our website. And that's at whateverworks.works. AidanBell.com is where you'll find Aidan. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find links to all the stuff we do. All of our audio podcasts, all of our MeWe groups, links galore to TedSalmon.com. So head across there if you get lost. We'll be back in 3 weeks' time with another show, unless you force us by bombarding us with content to make it a shorter period. And last word to you, young Aidan.
Ted, say plethora.
Plethora.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot.
Whoa, whoa.
That means a lot.
Oh, I see.
Oh, never mind.
That means a lot. Plethora. Plethora. Yes. Very, very clever chap. Fancy catching me out like that. One last thing to say. Don't forget, whatever works,
works.
Tosser.